When a vaccine becomes available, take it.
Advice on which COVID vaccine to take. It's Friday, February 26th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. You can find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, more drug companies chip in vaccine for worldwide distribution. The U.S. to review supply chains. China could be the main target. Biden takes a closer look at immigrant children not reunited with their parents. And a Pakistan city is overcrowded, so another city is planned to be built. That and more on today's VOA Asia. A third vaccine is likely to soon join the COVID-19 fight, but the nation's top infectious disease expert is urging Americans not to be picky. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Makani reports.
Dr. Anthony Fauci knows people look at vaccine studies and compare effectiveness, 72% versus 95% and so on. They may then decide, I'll just wait for the next more effective one.
That, I think, is not a good idea.
Fauci on NBC News' Today Show saying people should be confident in any vaccine the FDA approves for emergency use.
When a vaccine becomes available, take it.
Johnson & Johnson's vaccine will take its turn before the FDA's independent advisor tomorrow, and Fauci is looking forward to it joining the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines already in use.
To have two is fine. To have three is absolutely better.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
The COVAX facility for coronavirus vaccines will soon get access to 170 million doses of AstraZeneca's vaccine, that according to the UN Children's Fund. The COVAX facility aims to ensure at least 2 billion vaccine doses are available to 85 of the world's poorest countries. UNICEF said that Thursday and said that deliveries of the vaccine will begin in the first quarter of 2021. Two other vaccine makers, Pfizer and the Serum Institute of India, are also providing their vaccines to COVAX for distribution. In other COVID-19 news, a new study finds the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is as effective in real-world use as it was during its late-stage clinical trials. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Supporters of the military regime in Yangon attacked demonstrators protesting the February 1st overthrow of the civilian government in Myanmar. The Tokyo Olympics organizers outlined spectator restrictions for the torch relay. China's crackdown on Muslims spreads to tropical Hainan province. Malaysian opposition lawmakers and international human rights groups are demanding the government explain why it deported more than 1,000 Myanmar migrants in violation of a court order. The Japanese government will reportedly end a state of emergency in 5 prefectures west of Tokyo at the end of the month, a week earlier than scheduled. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. President Joe Biden signed an executive order Wednesday for a government review of global supply chains and potential U.S. vulnerabilities in key industries, including computer chips, electric vehicle batteries, pharmaceuticals, and critical minerals used in electronics. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara has this report.
Before ramping up production following the early months of the pandemic, the U.S. had a national shortage of personal protective equipment such as masks and gloves. Now, American automakers struggle to find semiconductor chips to keep assembly lines moving. These are among the issues President Joe Biden wants to address through an executive order for a 100-day government review of global supply chains and potential U.S. vulnerabilities in key industries, including electric vehicle batteries, semiconductors, critical minerals used in electronics, and pharmaceuticals.
These reviews will identify policy recommendations to 40 of our supply chain, to fortify our supply chains at every step, and critically to start implementing those recommendations right away.
Biden's order will also direct year-long reviews in the defense sector, public health, transportation, energy, information technology, and food production. The review can help U.S. companies invest strategically and become more agile during a crisis, said Scott Miller, a senior advisor on the global economy at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
The key is, with particularly with dramatic change or rapid change, you've got to do a good job of forecasting, and you got to think holistically. You got to look at the entire sort of life cycle of the operation.
While the executive order does not mention any country, the U.S. is particularly dependent on China in many critical industries and for rare earth minerals needed to make everything from consumer electronics to military equipment. Neda Sanders is a professor of supply chain management at Northeastern University.
That is not a good spot to be in. Having said that, I think to just say we're just focused on China is really short-sighted. And I think that this policy really looks at a really broad picture in terms of U.S. production, manufacture, economy. So it's not just China.
The Trump administration also pushed to shore up supply chains, mostly through tax cuts, to encourage American firms to manufacture domestically and import tariffs. Biden's strategy is different, says Samira Fazil, Deputy Director of the White House National Economic Council.
This work is not going to be about America going it alone. The answer to these weaknesses is not always to be to ramp up domestic production.
These little chips here for automobiles.
On Wednesday, Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris also met with lawmakers at the White House in order to garner bipartisan support to ensure supply chain resiliency. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, the militaries of India and Pakistan said in a rare joint statement Thursday that they had agreed to observe a ceasefire along the disputed border in Kashmir, having exchanged fire hundreds of times in recent months. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. A report submitted to the UN Human Rights Council warns of future violations and instability in Sri Lanka because of that government's repeated failure to redress past violations and bring justice to the victims. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Thousands of Tamils allegedly were killed and women sexually assaulted and raped by Sri Lanka's security forces in the last 6 months of the country's 26-year-long civil war. A report issued by the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights at the end of January documents violations including extrajudicial killings, enforced disappearances, arbitrary detention, torture, and sexual violence. It noted some of these violations, which could amount to war crimes or crimes against humanity, were committed by both the Sri Lankan military and the Liberation Tigers of Tamil Eelam, or LTTE. UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet submitted a critical assessment of the current situation in Sri Lanka to the Council. She said nothing has been done to ensure justice for the victims nearly 12 years after the armed conflict. She said the current government, like its predecessor, has failed to promote reconciliation or hold any of the perpetrators to account.
The impact on thousands of survivors from all communities is devastating. Moreover, the systems, structures, policies, and personnel that gave rise to such grave violations in the past remain and have recently been reinforced. Addressing grievances and redressing past violations are critical prevention tools at the core of the Council's work.
High Commissioner Bachelet said disturbing trends over the past year indicate a serious deterioration in civil and political rights. She cited the rapid shrinking of Sri Lanka's independent media and the erosion of judicial independence. She warned the growing militarization of key civilian functions was encroaching on democratic governance.
The continued failure to implement comprehensive reforms or to vet personnel leaves in place security and military officers who have been implicated in alleged grave crimes and violations. Long-standing structural and systemic issues persist in Sri Lanka, and now there are clear warning signs that past patterns of violations could be repeated.
Bachelet says the government has largely closed the door on ending impunity through a national process. Therefore, she urged the Council to explore new ways to advance accountability and seek redress for victims at the international level. Sri Lanka's Foreign Minister Dinesh Gunawardena rejected the High Commissioner's report.
The contents of the report are rife and factual inaccuracies that appear to equate atrocities committed by the LTT, a terrorist organization proscribed internationally, with a legitimate action taken by the government to safeguard the territorial integrity of the country and the right to life of our people.
The minister called on members of the council to reject any resolution based on this report. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. China's foreign ministry denied Thursday that U.S. diplomats in the country had been required to take anal swab tests for COVID-19 following media reports that some had complained about the procedure. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue on VOA Asia. President Joe Biden Wednesday revoked a proclamation from his predecessor that blocked many green card applicants from entering the United States. Former President Donald Trump issued the ban last year, saying it was needed to protect U.S. workers amid high unemployment due to the coronavirus pandemic. Biden rejected that reasoning in a proclamation on Wednesday rescinding the visa ban. The Democratic president said it had prevented families from reuniting in the United States and had harmed U.S. businesses. Biden, a Democrat, has pledged to reverse many of Trump's hardline immigration policies. Immigrant advocates had pressed in recent weeks for him to lift the visa ban, which was set to expire March 31st. Biden did leave in place another ban on most foreign temporary workers. The Biden administration is working to speed up the release of immigrant children from holding facilities and send them to relatives or sponsors. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
The Department of Health and Human Services has authorized operators of long-term facilities to pay for flights and transportation for some children to get them to the homes of their sponsors. Under current guidelines, the sponsors have to foot the bill, which can be over $1,000 a child. Now government money can be spent if the family can't afford it, according to a memo obtained by the Associated Press. The government's reduced capacity at holding facilities because of COVID, but Border Patrol picks up about 200 youngsters a day. The National Center for Youth Law applauds the idea of paying for transportation, but calls on the Biden administration to find more ways to release children even faster. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Happening in Asia, a new study claims new variants of the African swine fever virus circulating in China appear to cause a milder form of the disease, making it less deadly but harder to detect and get under control. Stay with us for the latest news from and about Asia at voanews.com and all of our digital platforms. Residents at an assisted living facility in the U.S. are getting a taste of life before the coronavirus pandemic. Thanks to a hug tent, residents can, while wearing plastic sleeves, embrace and hold hands with their family members. More from VOA's Mariama Diallo.
87-year-old Jeannie Sheldon suffers from Alzheimer's, a form of dementia. A resident of Juniper Village in Denver, Colorado, she now gets to hug her son, something she hasn't done in months.
It's been a long time since.
Her son, Tom, says he hasn't seen her in person since last October.
She feels the pain of separation, of not being around family. She was very family-oriented all her life, and so it's just tough to watch that.
Tom says he's grateful for the people who set up the tent at the assisted living facility, even if contact is made through super thick plastic sheeting.
That was wonderful to be able to put my arms around her and feel her, and for her to put her arms around me. Even though she has memory issues, they still live in the moment, and they can enjoy every single moment.
With over 28 million confirmed coronavirus cases, the U.S. has been one of the most affected countries in the world. For the elderly in particular, little hugs can make a world of difference, says Juniper Village's Anna Hostetter.
The tent is disinfected between uses, and they can finally give their loved one that hug or handhold that they haven't had in almost a year now.
Moments that can be heartbreaking at times, but they also warm your heart.
It's your daughter,
says volunteer coordinator Amanda Meyer.
It's really hard to describe. It's hard to describe having lived with these people my whole life and worked with these people and these families, and the thought of them not having any physical connection for 8-10 months is really kind of just heartbreaking to me. And so the personal reward for me has been the joy that transfers from them when I see how happy that they are.
Since the pandemic hit, similar tents have popped up around the United States and in countries like Britain and Brazil, where some people call them cuddle curtains. In Brazil, Elizabeth Lisboa visited her father in an elderly care facility last summer. In an emotional reunion, the pair hugged and kissed.
Our lives were taken away. We used to come here nearly every day to see Dad.
Another family in the same facility sang and danced together after months of not seeing each other. Dirce Villas Boas, who is 93, said she couldn't be happier after spending time with her daughter.
The bond of a mother hugging her daughter. Her heart was swollen, very swollen. It is good. I'm good. And she is calmer.
A therapist at the nursing home said despite having that plastic barrier, there is touch, which is extremely valid as it kills the longing that one has had after such a long time apart. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
We continue on VOA Asia. Highly crowded Lahore City in Pakistan has the same crowding issues of many urban environments. To help ease the problem, the government plans to build a new city just to the north, but that has some residents worried. VOA's Saman Khan has more in this report narrated by Vaizan Hamdar.
There are hundreds of small agricultural villages on the banks of Ravi River north of Lahore City in Pakistan, where livestock and farming are the main sources of income. But that could change because the government is preparing to build a new city alongside the banks of the river just an hour east of Lahore, which has caused some concern among local villagers.
Some officials came here and took measurements of our houses and said that government will throw you out from here. Then where will we go? Almost all of Lahore vegetables come from here.
The project is being run by the Ravi Urban Development Authority. Pakistan government plans on building a new city on roughly 102,000 acres of land along the Ravi riverfront in three phases over 30 years. The project's chairman says the project is necessary to ease Lahore City's alarming growth and use of resources.
We are building a river line. When you create a planned city, the growth of Lahore City will stop. New housing developments, new societies here will help the rapid growth of Lahore City.
However, environmentalists disagree. Hamad Naqi, head of environmental organization World Wildlife Fund for Nature in Pakistan, says it is not wise to build a new city near a densely populated city like Lahore.
They're saying that if this project happens in Lahore, we'll have sewage treatment, and if this project is there, then there will be an urban forest. There is already Shadara urban forest there. They should bring that up to standards first and then see where and how much real estate development is possible.
According to the government, the project will also help reduce the risk of floods in the area. But experts say it's still not clear what kind of challenges and obstacles the long-term project may bring. The project is still in its planning phase, but some environmentalists are already opposed to building of a new city and are trying to stop the development on environmental grounds. A decision on the project's future lies in Lahore High Court. For Saman Khan in Lahore, Pakistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
A former New York City police officer has been charged with using an aluminum pole to attack a U.S. Capitol officer during the January 6th assault on the Capitol building by supporters of former President Donald Trump. Brian Wood reports.
A former New York City police officer has been charged with assaulting a U.S. Capitol officer when supporters of former President Donald Trump stormed the Capitol building earlier this year. 54-year-old Thomas Webster, also a former Marine, surrendered to authorities in New York on Monday after the FBI sought the public's help to find him. A federal prosecutor said the married father of three was captured on video attacking a Capitol Police officer with a pole and his bare hands, ripping off the officer's protective gear and shouting obscenities. Webster's lawyer said he had only been at the Capitol on January 6th to protest. But the federal judge in his case said, quote, "What we see in the video goes well beyond First Amendment speech and moves into criminal activity." The federal prosecutor said in response to the footage, quote, "These videos shocked the conscience, a look of pure rage on the defendant's face. His teeth were gritted." More than 200 people have been charged for their roles in the Capitol riot, which left five people dead.
That was Reuters' Brian Wood. We continue on VOA Asia. Minnesota-born Rebecca Brower spent decades moving around the United States for her husband's career, but missed her farming roots. So as Moxie Moskalkov reports, when the couple had a chance to settle down on a farm in semi-rural Virginia, they took it.
This one is Zeus. So I can go up to him and go, "Hey, Zeus." And once one gets attention, they're all kind of curious, but there are the certain ones that will stay back.
Rebecca Brower knows each of her 20 sheep by name. She isn't a seasoned farmer yet. She only got her first sheep 5 years ago. But Brower knows what farm life is like.
I grew up in the Midwest on a farm, and I was the youngest, so there were always animals that... There were orphans and different things, just like on Charlotte's Web. There was the animals that needed special care and nurturing, and I was really the one that did that when I was young. I was, 5 years old.
Brower missed her farming roots, but returning to farm life remained an elusive dream, as she and her husband moved endlessly for his work, first in the Navy and then in information technology. Finally, the couple found their perfect spot in Loudoun County, Virginia.
Loudoun County is kind of a special place in that it's a blend of IT infrastructure and services, but also really pastoral and idyllic landscapes like you see around here.
The family bought 4 hectares of land with nothing on them except an 18th century half-disintegrated building. The Browers built a house and stables and purchased a couple of Frisian horses, Queen Elizabeth's favorites.
Smile!
Bow for me. Bow. Back. That wasn't very much, was it, huh?
Then they constructed a pen for the Gothlandian sheep. It was the beginning of a whole new career for Rebecca Brower, who started creating goods made from the wool. She renovated the old building that now serves as her studio.
I had gone to the Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival, one of the first years we were here, and I bought a raffle ticket and actually won that spinning wheel. So from there, the fiber journey started, and I started spinning and weaving and just doing things with fiber.
In her studio, Brower makes various clothing and decor items made of wool. Scarves, hats, mittens, shawls, pillows, dresses, placemats, and even rugs and tapestry. She says thanks to the high quality of the wool, she can let creativity guide her.
This is some of the yarn that I've had, and just look at the way the light comes off of that. It's just, there's something about the quality of that wool. It's great for felting. It's great for spinning. It's great for weaving. It's great for knitting and crochet, all the different things.
Today, Brower is not only a farmer and a designer, but also a successful entrepreneur. She started selling her creations at farmers' markets, and now customers find her and come to her studio. And her IT-savvy husband has helped her create her own website to push her dream even farther. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Purcellville, Virginia.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Amy Heibel, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please take care of yourself and others and enjoy the day ahead.